If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
This is Steve Downes, the voice of Master Chief, Sierra 117, and you're listening to Podcast Unlocked, the world's number one Xbox podcast. Now, finish this fight. Master Chief, out.
What's happening, friends? Welcome to Podcast Unlocked. It is IGN's weekly Xbox show. This is April 24th. As we're recording this, we're publishing it, though, first thing in the morning on the 25th. I'm Ryan McCaffrey here, joined, thankfully, by Destin Legarry. Good to see you, my friend.
Bam. Hey, everybody. Good to see you, Ryan.
Good to be here. I wanted to, if everybody's wondering what on earth is Ryan wearing, I had to pour one out this week for my Arizona Coyotes right there. They played their last game in Arizona. The NHL is taking them away because their owner sucks. They're moving them to Utah as an expansion franchise, which makes me sad because I'll tell you, hockey, Destin, have you ever been to a hockey game in person, either like NHL or any level?
I'm Canadian. It's required.
It's required.
Yeah.
It's really fun in person, isn't it? It's a great in-person sport.
Oh, yeah. It's great in person. I actually was really into hockey when I was little, and my brother played it on goalie. So I actually like hockey.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Even though I will admit I haven't actively followed it as closely in recent years, but I've been following this saga of them trying to get a new arena, and now they're just packing up and leaving town. And it's super sad to see. So yeah, as you can tell, I definitely was a big Coyotes fan back in the day, and had this sweater made. So thought I this is the first time I've taken it out of the closet in quite a while. I felt it was appropriate just to pour one out here in a public forum here on Podcast Unlocked. But
yeah, if you ever want to talk about when Gretzky played for the Oilers, or Patrick Waugh, or Chris Chelios, I think was his name.
Chelios, right?
Chelios. Yeah.
Long time
Seriously,
Blackhawk.
It was like, yeah, when I was 9 years old is the last time I followed hockey. Gretzky going to the Kings was a big deal, everybody.
Yeah. I like that you called him Chris Chelios.
I meant Chelios.
That's
yeah.
My favorite
Patrick Waugh
name.
Patrick Waugh, though, was like the
goalie. You did pronounce that one correct. You're good. So your credibility is
intact. I wasn't a big Penguins fan. So.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Enough hockey. That was your hockey minute here. If you had that on your unlocked bingo card, congratulations. You just won a very unlikely point.
Enjoy my outdated hockey references.
All right. Let's talk some video games. First up, a couple of public service announcements that, yes, are video game related, I promise. So first, next week, IGN, not literally Destin and I, but we as a team, IGN, are presenting an ID at Xbox showcase. We did one last year that Destin, you did put together.
Yeah.
This year.
And they were like, never again.
No, it's going to be great, man. So it's on Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific. That's April 29th, this coming Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific. That's 1 p.m. Eastern. If you're not sure what time it is in your time zone, Google it. I wanted to mention that not only is something you should watch because it's going to have new Xbox games on it, ID at Xbox games, but because we will be joining you, Podcast Unlocked will come at you immediately after that for a post show, as we like to do after these big Xbox stream showcases events. So join us for that. That's going to be, so the show is at an abnormal time, not Wednesday, not Thursday next week, Monday. So join us Monday morning, immediately following that ID at Xbox stream. It starts at 10 a.m. Pacific. The lineup, by the way, I can tease a few things that were publicly announced, includes Vampire Survivors, Dungeons of Hinterberg, 33 Immortals, Lost Records, Bloom and Rage, and more. So good stuff on tap. Join us for that. And then, Destin, are you taking notes? Are you paying attention?
Yep, I am.
Okay, good. The other PSA is for a little bit further down the road, but it's relevant now because tickets are now available for IGN Live. Yes, IGN's one-of-a-kind summer fan event coming to the city of Los Angeles June 7th through 9th. It's going to be at the Magic Box near-ish downtown. Head on over to IGN.com/live to purchase either single-day tickets or three-day VIP passes. I'm told that the three-day VIP passes are the hot item right now. Those are going quick. So the VIP pass comes with several perks, including a gift bag worth $50 with an exclusive t-shirt, hat, and other goodies, as well as priority access and reserved screening room seating at the event. IGN Live attendees can expect a multi-day stage show featuring confirmed partners, including Amazon Games, Atari, Bandai Namco, Crunchyroll, Giant Skull, Indie.io, Lenovo Legion, Netflix, Null Games, PM Studios, S Games, Squanch Games, makers of High on Life, Square Enix, and Tripwire Interactive, with others to be announced soon. So our events team is working super hard to put this together for you. And we are looking forward to, you know, I think the big dream that, you know, this is going to be step one of is to, you know, try and do what E3 never properly did, which was to have a fan event where you can come play games and just see developers and see panels, things like that. So step one here, IGN Live this June 7th through 9th in Los Angeles. Again, tickets at IGN.com/live. Come meet us in person. Destin and I will be there. Hang out with your fellow gamers and see lots of cool stuff. Speaking of cool stuff, Destin, I'm going to be totally honest with you, my friend. When I was putting together this podcast yesterday, our notes, this is a pretty dead week as far as Xbox goes. Like, there's not a lot to talk about. Although when I was thinking about it, it's kind of dead for everything on the console side. Like, PlayStation doesn't have any first party anything for a while. And Nintendo's stuck in this kind of dead zone while we're all waiting for Switch 2. So it's just kind of quiet all around.
Well, the talk of the town right now is Stellar Blade. So that just came out, seems to be reviewing pretty well. So
yeah,
credit where credit's due. Stellar Blade is available on the PlayStation platform. So yeah, it is what it is. But there's some exciting stuff coming up. And we did get an update about Halo Infinite, which I was putting down a few notes about.
Nice. We'll get to that in a bit. I wanted to start with the thing that was most interesting to me, and it's not a backhanded compliment just because I do think it is a slow week overall. This was the one thing that really jumped out at me, and I want to hear from you on it, Destin, as well, because I know you played a bit of the first one. Mm-hmm. So we got an announcement kind of out of nowhere. I mean, not that it was unexpected per se, because the first one was very good, but Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 has been announced. And we're told it will be twice as big as the original. It'll be, quote, a behemoth of a game, according to the developers. So we have a little background for you because IGN did an interview with the developers alongside the announcement. The studio is, of course, Warhorse Studios. They officially announced Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, the sequel to its popular RPG set in medieval Bohemia. Warhorse fully unveiled the sequel at a private event last week, confirming, among other things, that it will be twice as large as the original, touting it as a, quote, behemoth of a game. Quote, we are making now, or what we are making now, is what it was supposed to be in the beginning, but we weren't able to do it because we didn't have enough resources and experience and all that stuff, says creative director Daniel Vavra in the presentation from last week. He continues saying, we've proven the concept works, so now we can take it to another level, which is what we always wanted, end quote. To that end, Kingdom Come will be much bigger in scope with, quote, 5 hours of cutscenes instead of 3, and a story that's, quote, much more epic. It will pick up the story where the original left off, with the game's protagonist Henry and his traveling companion Sir Hans Capone. But where the previous game was all about small nobility, Kingdom Come 2 will be about, quote, the problems of kings. Like other recent RPG success stories, most notably Baldur's Gate 3 and Cyberpunk, Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 will seek to craft a highly reactive world in which players can develop Henry in any way they see fit. Quote, Henry's a young guy, so he's not so deeply entrenched in this already, is his set character traits, said the lead designer. So you can build your Henry in different ways. Among other details revealed by Warhorse, Kingdom Come 2 will include a reputation system in which NPCs will call out Henry if he develops a reputation for drinking or thieving, and he can respond in kind. At a higher level, Henry will be able to, quote, save the world or, quote, punish it for its sins, implying a multitude of different paths for the young knight. Destin, I'll start with you here, because you have a one-up on me in that you've played the first one a bit. I have not.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on the first one, which, by the way, IGN did give an 8 out of 10 to, so we gave it a great score.
I think the main reason I remember playing it is because there was some controversy around the first one, or at least a little bit of it, and then I'm just like, well, I have to play it now just to see what the game's all about. And I remember playing it. I sort of liked it, but it was very methodical in how you had to do everything at the time, so I didn't get a tremendous grasp on it, but I remember liking it, and it was well received. People really liked the original Kingdom Come, and when you start looking at what they're doing with the sequel, they're really focusing in on the character models, the animations, the reactivity that other combatants have during a battle. Like, you see the shield bash and another guy goes and then you attack him. Like, that's really, really engrossing and compelling, and to me that looks fun. I like that they're sort of giving you carte blanche to do whatever you want in this world. You can be the worst version of yourself as this character, or the best version. And those are the best games, aren't they? Like, decide how you want to encounter every character in the world. Be the worst person ever, or be likable.
Well, you know what I'm going to choose, right?
Of course. Yeah. Evil.
Evil. Yeah. I mean, some of my favorite RPGs have allowed me to fully embrace evil. Like of course, KOTOR being the prime example, but Mass Effect as well. Mm-hmm. And then Fable, particularly Fable 1, was the one that sort of leaned hardest into that, although the other ones did as well. So yeah, I'm all for just being a thieving scumbag in this medieval world. Because, you know, I can't do that in real life, I won't do that in real life. I will choose not to in life where there are actual meaning consequences. Yeah, I could. I could head on over and just become, the worst version of myself, but I would rather do that in a video game where nothing bad will actually happen to me. But for me, I'm a sucker for, like you just said, Destin, I'm a sucker for games where I can be good or evil. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for first-person games in general. I'm a sucker for first-person RPGs. That is how I prefer to play my RPGs whenever possible. And I'm also a sucker for medieval fantasy games. Hello, Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, as one of my favorite games ever. That's a big reason why, is how they just completely nailed that medieval fantasy setting in that game. So this is checking, all the boxes for me. I went back and just took a quick look at some of the reviews on the first one. And I guess it was one of the big complaints is that it was kind of a pain in the ass to play. Like, it was somewhat unforgiving.
That's probably why I bounced.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not really looking for that. So we'll see if the second one smooths that out.
I think it's because combat required blocking and then attacking from different angles, if I remember correctly. But when did this game come out? Like, it feels like it was a million years ago.
I think 5 years ago. I'd have to double check. I can million check, years check ago, that Destin one. Time. Yeah.
But so when I played it, I do remember that, and I couldn't, it never quite clicked. So while the story was somewhat engrossing, it didn't really get its hooks in you from the get-go for me. And for me, that is the main driver. Like, I'll figure out gameplay if the story is good enough. But if the gameplay is hard to get into and the story's not really doing it for me in the beginning, then I'm just kind of all right. And I probably just had a bunch of projects at the time. I don't want to make excuses. It was a popular game. Wasn't for me. This one, it just seems to be hitting the right notes, and the way that they've teased the story beats, like you get that story reward or the story drive pushing you forward towards the next mission. And I'm really all about that in our games.
Yeah. So I just checked and it just turned 6 years old, the first one. So it was February of 2018, which I can't believe 2018 is 6 years ago already. Yeah. That's neither here nor there, but yeah, so it's definitely been a minute, which is maybe why this sequel announcement caught me a little off guard, is because I mean, I certainly remember this game, but as I said, I didn't play it. And the fact that it's been 6 years is like, oh, it's kind of haven't really thought about Kingdom Come Deliverance in quite a while. But this now, it's according to the trailer, it's going to be out by the end of the year. So this to me, Destin, I don't know about you, this just went like zipped right up near the top of my wish list. Like this.
Yeah.
Like I said, this trailer, which I think we're checking out again here, is
it's great. It's the perfect trailer showcasing. Yeah, you can get the first game right now for $5. Steam has just had crazy sales lately. Obviously, they're trying to sell the first game based on the hype of the second. And it's like, hey, if you like Skyrim and Dragon's Dogma, you're probably going to like Kingdom Come Deliverance. You can get it for $5.99 right now on Steam if you're playing on PC. And I don't know what other platforms that ended it up coming to, but it was originally a PC title when it launched.
I think it was on consoles as well. Let me double check.
Probably
that.
Right.
I mean, the second
apologies, everybody.
That's all right, my friend. Don't worry about it. Let me just see if I can find that real quick.
Yeah, I think
it was on Xbox and PlayStation as well.
Yeah, I think it came to platforms.
No, sorry, just Xbox, not PS4, Xbox One, PS4. Yeah, as expected. So, this first trailer totally won me over, and suddenly. You know, because really the second half of the year, particularly, I mean, just with Xbox specifically, but I think you could apply this in general. The second half of the year is kind of just uncertain for the most part. But because we have Hellblade 2 coming up, by the way, in 1 month. I'm just realizing game's out near the end of May. It's now the end of April.
Really?
So we're right around the corner on Hellblade. So we got to
play some
big. Yeah, big new first party game to dig into here very soon. But this is going to be end of the year, assuming it doesn't get delayed, which it may very well. But for now, end of the year on this. And then, Destin, there is another big first party, first person RPG coming out in the fall as well. So
the Fallout 4 update.
That'll be out much
like
sooner.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be out much sooner. Of course. Where you're jokingly referring to Avowed. So Avowed and Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, two first-person fantasy role-playing games hitting Xbox by the end of the year. If that is, like me, first-person fantasy stuff, RPGs is your jam, you're eating good on Xbox later this year. So that is some good news. It's got me a little more pumped for the end of the year, which, like I said, is otherwise kind of uncertain right now. So we'll see what else we get. But Hellblade 2 next, and then a couple of hopefully killer RPGs coming to Xbox later in the year. All right, Destin, you wanted to talk a little Halo Infinite. We've got another update there. Take it away, my friend.
Hey, it's Destin with your latest on Halo Infinite, because I still play that game pretty often. Anyway, they did a live stream recently. Halo Infinite's going through a few changes. They're introducing Spartan points, and they're bringing back some of the things that you could only get like during the early first few weeks of the game's launch. They're like, that's dumb. So let's introduce Spartan points. Now, I took this from Windows Central, but it's described as a new earnable currency that players will get for going through matches and completing passes. Spartan points can then be used in the exchange on returning cosmetics that have rotated out or been unavailable for months and years since the game first launched back in November 2021. And I know Sketch talked about this on the stream, where he was talking about bringing back old cosmetics that hadn't been there for a while. Banished Honor is this battle pass. It's going to be a 20-tier pass, and it's coming out April 30th, so it's right around the corner. We have the Fallout 4s update is coming finally after a long time. We have a new April 30th, 20 tier battle pass coming to Halo Infinite. And Ryan, you're going to be very happy to hear this. The plasma pistol once again causes EMP damage to vehicles. That was such a strange... Every time I pick it up, I still shoot the vehicles. And it was so weird not to have. It is so nice to see it back. They'll be bringing it back shortly to the game. And I, for one, am very happy. So just a little bit of an update on how they're doing currency. And just a reminder, if you're still in the camp like Halo Infinite isn't any good, they have been constantly updating this game. There's been a ton of community support for Halo Infinite. It's still a lot of fun. I did the Gruntpocalypse a little bit when that was going on. That was fun. There's a lot to play right now. So if you've lapsed, I do recommend checking it out, because I think it's done a lot of work to improve the game from where it was at launch, and it deserves kudos where kudos is due. So
yeah, I admit I haven't jumped back in quite a while, and I suspect if and when I do, it's gonna not literally like look in terms of visually look different, but the menus will probably look different because there'll be a whole bunch more maps on there. They're like, they've added a bunch of maps already.
Yeah, there's a lot of
many other things.
Yeah, there's a lot. And I think they added some new community options for Forge. I know one of them they were discussing on the stream was a new flood sort of look. And it looks absolutely disgusting in their own words. And I agree. It looks like very mutated and pussy and gross. And yeah, so you have a new palette option for all the Forgers out there. And I'm always excited to see what's going on with Halo Infinite, and I'm excited about these positive changes where you can actually earn currency to buy the exact piece of gear that you've been chasing. A welcome change up.
You know, I know half of our audience will get mad at me saying this and invoking any kind of comparison, but there was a story on IGN today, and yes, this does tie into Halo, about how, I mean, we talked all about it last week, but it's the wave has only built higher, where
there it is.
Fallout 76 had 1 million players last week.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's and across all the Fallout games, it's 5 million.
Fallout 4 has 114,000 people playing right
concurrent.
Now.
Yeah,
it's like number 7 most played.
Yeah, and so the reason I bring this up in relation to Halo is, and I'm not here to tear down the Halo TV show, because like I said, you know, when we talked about season 2, I liked season 2. It was a lot better. It was good. It wasn't amazing. It definitely wasn't on the Fallout level, but it's certainly a lesson to Microsoft. Not that they're not trying to make a great show, but could you just imagine, Destin, like if the Halo show had been top tier television, like The Last of Us was on HBO and like Fallout is on Prime Video, Halo Infinite would be seeing these huge spikes in player count right now. So it's I know part of that is that it's on Paramount Plus, which is just not nearly as big of a streaming service as certainly HBO/Max or Prime Video. But I couldn't help but think of it. Again, I'm not trying to tear down the Halo show because I do enjoy it, but seeing this just insane seeing the tide rise on all of the Fallout games, none of which are new. Like these are not, in fact, all of the Fallout games are older than Halo Infinite is.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if the things had gone differently and Halo was probably on a different streaming service and was of the caliber that Fallout is, we'd be seeing, yeah, Halo Infinite we'd be talking a lot more about that and the rush of players going into it. And I think the way I'll tie it back into what you were talking about, Destin, is that it's kind of too bad that's not the case, because as you said, a lot of work has been going into Halo Infinite, and it deserves for people to to come back to it and take another look at it.
Yeah, what's really unfortunate about Halo is you have the stories. There's plenty of books that have been written about the Halo franchise that are fantastic that haven't been done yet in any way. So it's really unfortunate that they always have to, like, oh, we got to change it up or something like that. It's like, you really don't. You just need to respect the original source material, and you need to stop, like, I don't know, like, they're just like, oh, this isn't good enough. It's not going to appeal to modern audience. We need, like, sex appeal and all this, like, strange. It's like, no, just tell the Halo story. Like, just tell the freaking story.
Well, they are now. Stop. Like, heading into season three, it looks like that's what we're finally going to do.
But
is go through Halo 1.
Obviously, it's not resonating the way the Fable story did. So it's clear when you have people
the Fallout
who,
story. I think
the Fallout story. You're correct.
Maybe there'll be a Fable show someday. Who knows? Yeah.
When you have people that actually really, really get into the nitty gritty and respect the source material, it's really, really refreshing to see just how much of a positive impact it has on your franchise. Look what it did for The Last of Us. Look what it did for Fallout. And I'm sure there's even Twisted Metal is having a lot of positivity around it. And there's a God of War show coming. There are other shows that could have that same effect. I hope it does, because it's proving that, hey, you can make good video game things. Look at that.
And just to give a little bit of balance, on the Xbox side, we do have, we'll see if it actually happens, because there have been a lot of false starts over the years, but Netflix, talking about a bigger streaming service, the biggest one, is doing a Gears of War movie.
Yep.
So if that kicks ass and it's really good, well, then that's going to cause a resurgence. We've seen it now. It's going to cause a resurgence for the Gears games, which would be great to see, because I'm a mega Gears fan. I mean, I would say only Miranda. I got to give the crown to Miranda. She is the biggest Gears fan at IGN, but I'm I'm right there as her understudy, just, you know, hanging in second place on that. But so we'll see. So hopefully the Gears movie is really good. Hey, Destin, have you watched Reacher on Prime? That's on Prime.
I watched four or five episodes from the first season. So I haven't fully caught up, but, like, I watched where, like, he gets arrested and then the sort of conclusion of that arc. And then they start investigating something. So I don't want to spoil it, but I have watched a bit of it.
So I bring it up only because I know I've seen the community suggestion that I'm completely blanking on his name right now, and I apologize. Alan Richson, that's it. That the guy that plays Reacher, Alan Richson, would be perfect for BJ Blazkowicz if there's ever a Wolfenstein movie.
Oh, which, yeah.
That is perfect casting. I mean, he looks he literally looks like the real actual human version of BJ Blazkowicz. But I would also like to put him out as a suggestion for Baird in Gears. Mm. I think he would make a great Baird based on his look. You just got to, you know, got to dye him blonde, but his look and just the way his acting style and his, I think he'd be awesome in
the
Gears
way
movie.
The way that he portrays the sort of tough guy, it's just like no nonsense, but he can, like, have that smirk and that look in his eye, like, right before he does something either fun or nasty to a villain or a antagonist in the story. And I absolutely agree. That's actually really, really good casting for BJ Blazkowicz because of that sort of a nuance that he has as an actor. I like your pick, Ryan.
Yeah. And I mean, we've still got to give it to Dave Bautista as Marcus, though. He's still got to be our Marcus Phoenix. Hopefully that will come to fruition. We'll have to see. But anyway, I do know how we got from Halo all the way here, but I'm glad we talked a little Halo and crowbarred in some fun Xbox TV show talk while we were at it. Let's move next to talk about some GTA. Grand Theft Auto V voice actor Stephen Ogg has said that Rockstar originally planned to make a story expansion focused on Trevor, though it was seemingly canceled as a result of GTA Online becoming so popular. So this was reported by The Loadout, where Ogg was joined by Michael actor Ned Luke and Franklin actor Sean Fontano in a Q&A session with Streamily. The trio shed light on what they claimed was scrapped DLC for GTA 5 that starred Trevor as a Federal Investigation Bureau agent. Quote, originally they were going to do continuing stories of Michael, Franklin, and Trevor, Luke said, and Og expanded on his version. We also had that really cool stuff of, and I forget if it was DLC, I have no idea, but where Trevor was going to be undercover, he works for the feds. And we did shoot some stuff that was stuff with James Bond Trevor. He's still kind of an F up, but he's doing his best. And we shot some stuff and then it just disappeared and they never followed up on it, end quote. Luke then suggested it was canceled because of the success of GTA Online, which remains as popular now as it was at launch more than a decade ago. Quote, they went to GTA Online, I believe, Luke said of the DLC's story, DLC's cancellation.
This week's podcast Unlocked is brought to you by NordVPN. Hey, if you're watching a lot of sports like me and you hate blackouts, NordVPN is a great way to go. You can use NordVPN, a virtual private network, to watch live sporting events, TV shows, films that aren't available in your region by switching your virtual location to a country that is showing that event. No more blackouts. It's also good for plenty of other stuff like protecting your private data, your bank details, your passwords, your online identity. You can protect your data while you're traveling and using public Wi-Fi. NordVPN protects you wherever you are in the world. NordVPN threat protection also protects you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. NordVPN is also the fastest VPN in the world. No buffering or lagging while you're streaming, and it will stop your ISP bandwidth throttling. NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, so that is a super affordable, great way to go. To get the best discount off of your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E. That's nordvpn.com/unlocked. And that'll give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. And best of all, there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Destin, your thoughts on story DLC that we'll never get to play?
Yeah, it makes me really sad because there's rumors of this GTA 5 story DLC, which was supposed to be coming. It just never came to fruition. And this isn't the only franchise where that happens. We were just talking about Halo Infinite, which was supposed to have story content that, as far as we know, has been scrapped or tabled for the time being as they focus on multiplayer. But you know why? It's because one cosmetic in GTA Online probably made more money than all the campaign sales in the world. Those shark cards, man, people just buy them like crazy. So like that's what happens when you purchase those things. And when players purchase those things, it's just like, well, where should we be putting our resources? Let's make sure that those players that are just spending ridiculous amounts of money have more content to keep them invested in that aspect of the game. And unfortunately, time and time again, we are seeing that story content gets shelved in favor of how can we get people to live in our world longer as opposed to jumping over to Fortnite or whatever their favorite live-in experience is.
I mean, I get that Rockstar is a part of a publicly traded company whose job is to make money for its shareholders. So that's just the business reality. But in defense of gamers on this one, of anybody, Rockstar is the one company I've said this a million times. So I talk about how they effectively have unlimited resources to develop their stuff. And we've seen that borne out time and time again. It's you can't help but I don't even want to call it cynically wonder. You almost can't help but just fairly wonder, why couldn't we have both, Destin? Why couldn't we have the item in, you know, the GTA Online stuff that makes them money hand over fist and have the story content? Of course, I know the real answer is because any resources are going to, that, you know, would make more money for them by investing those resources into GTA Online.
Well, they probably looked at their historical data also, because we had Ballad of Gay Tony, and there was another
the Lost and Damned.
Yeah, Lost and Damned. And they're probably like, well, here's how much we earn from these. We can extrapolate that data and see how much we would make in the future. And I bet chances are the sell-through rate on those expansions was rather low. So they're like, well, let's...
Relatively speaking, right.
Yeah, relatively speaking. Online is the no barrier to entry, and if you just can play through this new content, so you know you're keeping people's foot in the door. You are giving a story experience through the online experience, and I guess that's the route they went. But I agree with you. I would have loved to see what the Trevor storyline was. It's a bummer we won't find out.
Yeah, because I mean those three characters. Remember, that was probably one of, if not the biggest creative risk that GTA 5 took when we were all talking about it and wondering about it before it came out, was like, oh, three protagonists? Yeah. How's that going to work? Is that going to work? And it turns out like all three were great. The writing, as always in the GTA games, was great. And so as somebody that said many times publicly, and I'll say it again here, that I think Grand Theft Auto 5 is one of the 10 best video games ever made all time, period. It's just a shame that we never got more single player stuff, more with Trevor, more with Michael, more with Franklin, those characters. I know, and yes, GTA Online is awesome. It's not an either or scenario. And the online heists are great. I've done that, and that's super cool content, but yeah, it's still a shame that we'll never get that single player story stuff for GTA 5. And quite frankly, at least now, for not that I love this any more, but like you said, we were expecting it. Like Rockstar had indicated that was going to happen for GTA 5. And as we heard from the voice actors, it was in the works. But with 6, at least I won't even go into 6 expecting any DLC, any single player DLC this time. I'll know to not even get my hopes up for that.
Yeah, there is still the question of what are they going to do with the online component for 6? Like, are they going to like upgrade everybody from 5 to the world of 6? Like, will they fly in? Because at the beginning of GTA Online, you actually fly in from another location. Yeah. That'd be a really simple way to port over those characters and, you know, with retain your player base while introducing new players. There's a lot of cool stuff they could do, and I'm very excited for GTA 6.
That's an understatement. Yeah. It's only going to be the most anticipated game for me personally in, gosh, I don't even know. I mean, Starfield was up there for me as the first new Todd Howard Bethesda Game Studios game in a long, long time. I'm trying to think.
And I think Starfield's biggest thing is that that formula that was introduced with the Elder Scrolls is sort of feeling dated. Character-driven narratives like the ones that we're seeing in the Rockstar games, where they tell one through story, I think, especially in current times, is really desired versus the space stories. I mean, people really enjoyed the story aspect of Starfield, I think, but it was the gameplay aspects that people felt dated, right? Yeah. All the loading screen. And then you play something like Dragon's Dogma 2 that's very seamless, and you realize, oh, wow, this is like much more engaging. It's much more immersive. And I do wonder about sort of that aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm only talking about kind of my hype factor ahead of time rather than what the actual payoff was. I mean, I'm just trying to think of personal examples, right, in my recent gaming life, that because GTA 6 is not like I'm going to be like unable to sit still as GTA 6 gets much closer. I'm going to be probably spending many hours on this podcast talking about it when it does arrive. But I guess maybe return to Monkey Island, which I know most people didn't care about. But for me, as someone that grew up with the Monkey Island games, and they're just classics, and that I never in a million years expected a new one from the original creator, Ron Gilbert, and that actually happened. And it turned out that one did turn out amazingly well. I gave it a 9 for IGN, and I still very much feel that way. So, but even that's certainly nowhere quite on the scale of a GTA. So yeah, maybe Return to Monkey Island, Starfield. I'm trying to think if like literally anything else has even come close for me.
For me, things that got me really hyped just in the last few years, I think Halo Infinite really had me hyped.
That would be me too.
And the payoff, I think it was good. It wasn't like the best thing I've ever played. Definitely a good Halo, not the best Halo. Obviously, it's hard to go back to the old days, but I really enjoyed it. So there was that one. And then God of War Ragnarok was probably the next one. I just love the God of War franchise. I love how they've really refined the combat in that game. So I ate that one up, played on the hardest difficulty. And Grand Theft Auto is probably the next one on my list. Starfield was on that list, but I just have not had the time to go back and really... You know, I'm at a different point in my life than I was when I played through Fallout 3.
You got two kids.
Yeah. It makes it a lot harder to play games like that where you kind of like really get invested into a storyline, and when you got to take a break to go get the baby or whatever, it does sort of take you out of that headspace. I'm really weird about my games, Ryan. I like to get like immersed, and I like
I'm with you.
Of time for games like that.
Some of my favorite gaming memories are with Bethesda games doing that, like immersing myself. I mean, I've told the story probably 100 times of when I first played Oblivion. Well, first played the final thing, because I'd been out to Bethesda to preview it for OXM a couple times. But this was back when exclusive reviews were still a thing. This is back in the magazine days. But I went out to do the exclusive review of Oblivion. I went out to Bethesda. And this was also before day zero patches had to fix everything. So you'd have what was referred to as a submission build. So you had a build of the game, in this case Oblivion, that you were submitting to Microsoft, to the certification team, to check through and then sign off on or reject and say, hey, this crashes Xboxes. We can't certify this. But a submission build usually meant it was pretty good to go 99% of the time. So I went out to play. And the thing is, those submission builds, because of the lead times to print all the, manufacture all the discs and get all the physical packaging ready, back when it was all 100% physical, there was no digital, it took time. So I played that game. I went out to Bethesda to review Oblivion at least 6 weeks before it came out, if not 8. And I stayed at there was a hotel directly next door, and they set me up in a conference room just by myself. And I spent 4 consecutive 11-hour days playing Oblivion.
Yeah.
And it's some of my favorite gaming memories because I didn't have to worry about, at that time, I didn't have any other life responsibilities like you're talking about. Like, I could just focus and almost literally live in Cyrodiil for all of my waking hours for 4 straight days before I had to go home and write the review.
And
I know exactly where you're coming from.
I kind of miss review events like that because you're sort of like, okay, this is like review time. You sit here and you play this game, and we're providing you an environment to just focus on this, and you can't really do other stuff, right? So I know there's always been a little bit of like an odd feeling within the community about those, but I actually think in hindsight, now that there's not that many of them, I think they're actually probably a better way to experience the game because you are sort of, you're like super embargoed. You have to be careful about leaking anything. You're not really distracted by a ton of stuff. I think it is a good environment to play through a game, especially a game like Oblivion, because there's no distractions, right?
Well, and that was also 2006, early 2006. There were no smartphones. There was no texting. Yeah. There's no phone that's a distraction in any way. There's no social media. Yeah. I was locked in on that game and not, like you said, nothing else. And So yeah, there was definitely, I mean, it's case by case with, like, you know, I think you're talking review events are kind of different than what I'm talking about, but still your point's taken. But even just to carry on with the point you're making is I do have really fond memories of playing each mainline Halo game for the first time. Like I know exactly where I was, and I just, like, I can remember back to that time because I was so lucky that a few of those were at Bungie. So those were special. And then even with Halo Infinite, I just remember, I remember that we got it like really early by modern standards. Like it was almost magazine kind of early that we got the campaign, because these, you know, it was the two separate things, the multiplayer and the campaign. And I just got to sit here and lock myself in this room that I'm in right now and have 25 great, mostly uninterrupted hours playing Halo Infinite campaign for the first time. And so, yeah, it's, I don't even remember how we got down this road, but now I'm having fun just reminiscing about the first time playing some of these games that we love.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. What I actually don't even know how the hell we got here, so I'll just move on.
That's okay. It's a good combo.
I'm looking back at the notes like, wait, we were talking about
GTA? We went from Grand Theft Auto 5 to GTA 6 to our favorite games.
Yeah,
to...
that's all right. Hey, it's a podcast. There are no rules. We do whatever we want. It's fine. People can just either fast forward or or press stop and go do something else. It's fine. Let's talk about a recent acquisition of Microsoft. That would be Blizzard. They spent a pretty penny to get Blizzard alongside, of course, Activision and King. And it will probably reassure Xbox fans out there to hear that World of Warcraft executive saying that Microsoft has, quote, let Blizzard be Blizzard since the acquisition. Speaking to Video Games Chronicle, World of Warcraft executive producer and vice president Holly Longdale revealed that the developer's day-to-day operations have remained largely unchained. Unchanged, pardon me. Unchained is different.
Unchained, that's
hopefully
a nice change.
Chained. That's that toxic workplace
what a great,
culture. That...
what a great change, Microsoft.
quote, there's no one asking us to do anything, Longdale told VGC. World of Warcraft is doing very well, and they're very proud of what it's been able to accomplish. So it's almost like just let it be and let it keep being awesome. They've been tremendously supportive, and it's like, let Blizzard be Blizzard. Longdale went on to laud the company's post-acquisition life as a beneficial business relationship, allowing Activision Blizzard to communicate and access information with fellow Microsoft-owned studios. Quote, we got time with Helen Chang from Mojang, and we were sharing information. So it's almost as if we have access to what worked for them, Longdale said. We got to speak to the Elder Scrolls Online team and share what we're up to and what's been working. It's almost like we get a benefit, end quote. So, Destin, I think this is exactly what Xbox fans would want to hear, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think there was definitely going to be an unfortunate time where, yeah, there's a lot of layoffs and everything, but at the same time, there was some of those, like Kotick needed to go, and there were some problematic issues at Blizzard that probably still need to be addressed. But I think we're starting to see the dust settle, hopefully, from the worst of it. And now everybody's sort of trying to figure out their place now. And what we're hearing from Blizzard is this feels better. This seems to be a positive change. This feels like they're able to focus on creating great stories, great gameplay experiences within the World of Warcraft and Blizzard franchises. Yeah. So that's refreshing to hear, honestly, because it has been a lot of sourness across the industry for so long. And it is nice to hear that at least Blizzard is getting to focus on just making great content again, because they have a lot of great stuff in their stables. And that was always my hope for the acquisition, that they could refocus, get rid of some of the toxicity that we've heard about at the company, and just get back to what everybody really wanted to do. And that's make great gaming experiences.
Yeah, perfectly said. I mean, it's you're right. There's the toxic culture that needs cleaning up, and you mentioned Kotick being shown the door, the golden parachute, sadly. But, you know, that needs to be rooted out, that toxic culture. But in terms of their creative decisions, yeah, we want them to be left alone to be Blizzard. This is a company that historically, for going all the way back, has never turned around a game quickly. So, like, Diablo 4 got announced, I want to say maybe, well, it was BlizzCon. I want to say maybe it was 2019. And then didn't end up coming out until 2023, so four years later, after they had a playable slice.
And remember, Chris Metzen announced his return in late 2023, so that was one of the changes. And I don't think that the World of Warcraft community has seen the impact of his return yet, but I have to imagine through the next year, they're going to see that. We still haven't seen the first Call of Duty, just expanding further out to the whole Activision portfolio and what that's going to look like now that the deal portion of the games have sort of come to fruition and come out and all the jumbling has happened. What's the next year going to look like? And then what are the next 5 years going to look like under new leadership with Microsoft? That's what I'm curious about. If Metzen's able to deliver, if the Warcraft team's able to deliver, and the employees are saying, hey, this has been a positive shift after the all the negative stuff sort of happened at the beginning, hopefully it is better for everybody, better for gamers, and better for employees at the end of the day.
Did you ever get sucked into WoW, Destin?
I have not. I hear it's really hard to get into. I have been curious about installing it and trying it out.
No, like, Dustin, you have a family. Don't do it.
Well, things have changed since World of Warcraft launched. There is a battle for screen time that every developer needs to consider. So when you're talking about making the next Fortnite, you have to go up against Fortnite. You have to go up against my Destiny 2 time. And if there is a game that happens to pull me away from any of those properties for long enough, it has to be like exceptional. So going back to World of Warcraft or World of Warcraft Classic, not having those same tie-ins and having all of these other games competing for my time and attention. We just talked about Hellblade 2, which will be a shorter experience, but like that's competing for my attention. And there's a lot on the market right now that sort of competes. So that is something to consider just on the market generally.
Yeah, I was just curious because I too have never gotten into WoW, and it's maybe the only game I can think of that I've purposely avoided, even though I want to play it and I think I would love it. But it's because I've seen so many people where it completely takes over all their time. I'm not saying in a bad way, but just I want to be freed up to play other games and do other things. So it's like it's almost just too much of a temptation for me to play World of Warcraft that I feel like I'd completely get lost in it and you'd never see me again. So
Destiny 2 is my 2000 hour game. So I don't know if I could do another one, you know?
Yeah, you've got that one on your resume for sure. But I did mention it too, just because this year, we were talking about this in a meeting recently, in the fall, WoW turns 20. It'll be 20 years of what is unquestionably the most successful live service game in history, like the longest running. I wonder how much money it's made in its 20-year run. It's got to be an absurd amount of money.
Let me look it up. Let's see a Google AI. 9.23 billion?
I mean, I believe you, just for 20 years.
2004 to 2016.
Oh, so that's not even the last, So it's actually way more than that.
Yeah.
Oh man. And then before we go, just cause we're talking about movies and video game tie-in movies. And I think our producer Red had a shot up there for a minute, a scene from the Warcraft movie. Did you ever see the Warcraft movie?
No, I heard it was like bad, but not terrible. So I don't know enough about WoW to feel either way about it, but
I missed it too.
There are A friend of mine who plays WoW told me about like a Lich King and the story of the sword that has like a soul in it. And like, there's really, really compelling lore and really, really compelling stories in the World of Warcraft franchise. So again, it's another one of those situations. I'm like, just tell one of those stories. Like, I don't know why they have to change it up all the time. It's frustrating.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like nobody talks about the Warcraft movie, even though like now it's a thing of having movies and TV shows based off of games. Maybe it was that case where it was just too soon. Like maybe if it had come out now that it's more accepted, it would have done it. I guess maybe not if it was only a mediocre movie, but
it was anyway. Okay. It wasn't phenomenal. And I think that's what it had going against it. Like the D&D movie, phenomenal. But World of Warcraft, okay. So
D&D was good. I still have that on my watch list on Paramount Plus. I just haven't bothered to watch it yet.
Nothing but positive things about the D&D movie.
Yeah, that's Chris Pine, right? Is in that?
I think so. Yeah, it's supposed to be funny.
All right. Maybe I'll have to watch it this weekend. And with that, I want to thank our producer, Red. Thank you to Destin for hanging with me. Hopefully Stella will be back with us next time. And until then, speaking of next time, remember, ID at Xbox Showcase, live on IGN, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Monday, and we will join you immediately after that. So we'll see you then.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.